Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And then our offense was pathetic. Their defense was good, but, you know, we knew how they would play and what was open, and we didn't have any focus on getting it there, 17 turnovers. It was just a miserable night all around. We were bad. We were just bad. It was a bad night. I mean, it was just a bad night. It was a bad night, a very bad night. It was a night where we didn't play well, and I didn't help them. I didn't have any answers. It was a bad night.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. I don't know how many ways Stan Van Gundy could put it. You heard all of those as via Fox Sports Detroit. Just a real miserable, miserable, miserable loss to the Bucks last night. 102-89. Doesn't help that Greg Monroe really carried Milwaukee. He just scored real efficiently throughout the game, 12 of 15 for 25 points, 13 rebounds, 3 steals, a couple assists. When it's a former player you thought you were ready to move on from and he's the one lighting you up, that's not great, not ideal. The Pistons tried Drummond on him. Aaron Baines came in, didn't do a good job. Eventually, the Pistons went to Boban Marjanovic in the second half, trying to slow down Monroe. I mean, nothing was really working. It says a little something that Van Gundy would be willing to try Boban where he's at in the rotation in the event of a possible Aaron Baines trade. More on that a little bit in the episode. So there was at least some confidence in Boban there. But Michael Beasley also went off. High-scoring, efficient game. He did a lot of his damage on John Lure. He was just cooking. Beasley's a very good scorer. He can do that at times when he gets hot. He unfortunately got hot against the Pistons. That's just the luck of the draw more than anything, but he is capable of that. He had 23 points on 10 of 13 shooting. Marcus Morris did a little bit of a better job on him. Morris said he actually asked to switch on to Beasley, but Beasley was still scoring just fine on Morris. Maybe not as many opportunities. He was absolutely cooking, though, against Lure, and that was just too much for the Pistons to overcome, especially because on the other end, the Pistons were just turning the ball over a ton. They finished with 17 turnovers and 17 assists, but Reggie Jackson had 9 assists and only 1 turnover. So that means beyond Reggie Jackson, the rest of the team had 8 assists and 16 turnovers. Downright terrible. This is going to quiet the uproar for Ish Smith to replace Reggie Jackson in the starting lineup, at least for a day. We can get right back to that when Ish Smith has his next game better than Reggie Jackson. But at least for a day, it's going to quiet that. Potentially, if you just look at the brights or at the box score, you might see a couple bright spots. Marcus Morris, 26 points on 10 of 17 shooting. Andre Drummond had 21 points and 12 rebounds. But you will never guess who Stan Van Gundy singled out as the only Piston who played a good game. He was asked about Andre Drummond. That was the setup for the question. I guess I'm revealing it's not Andre Drummond. You'll never guess who the only Piston Van Gundy singled out was.
I honestly didn't think we had anybody play well tonight. I thought Reggie played well against our blitz and moving the ball.
Reggie Jackson, with 9 points on 3 of 7 shooting, was the one player who stood out as playing well on both ends. And yeah, he was moving the ball. I think that's a big part of the game plan against the Bucks is you have to keep the ball moving. You have to know where their traps are coming from. Their offense or their defense can be a little gimmicky, maybe not so gimmicky. I think they've become a little more conservative with it, but a little bit if you're well prepared. And it sounds like Van Gundy thought he had a game plan where the players understood where the Bucks would be coming from. You got to keep the ball moving against them. You can be one step ahead against them. And it just requires ball movement. Jackson was doing that, but it's such a low standard that with how he played, that was considered a good game. That's just how low the standard was. Just a real miserable game. I think Tobias Harris put it most simply and most accurate.
I thought, you know, our focus really wasn't as great as it needed to be today, especially in the game that, you know, we needed to win. This was a this would have been a big win for us. You know, just about building the consistency that we need to have as a team, and putting some games together. So, you know, when you step on the floor, you just got to be ready for whatever. And tonight, I don't think we were as mentally focused as we need to be.
This could have been the Pistons' sixth win in their last eight. One of those losses was to the Spurs, which I think is just a real forgettable thing. You lose to a team as good as San Antonio, you can just dump that one and move on. But could have been six wins in eight games. Would have been a nice opportunity to make that 7 of 9 against the Mavericks tomorrow, last game before the All-Star break. That game in at the Palace, the Mavericks not that good, even though they've been a little better lately. Could have just been a real chance for a lot of momentum. And you're playing a team in the Bucks who are wounded. Jabari Parker's out. They're still integrating Chris Middleton. Giannis Antetokounmpo had a rough game. And the Bucks are trying to catch the Pistons in the playoff race. In some ways, these games count double. And the Pistons just came out flat. They weren't good. Yeah, Greg Monroe hit some tough shots. Michael Beasley hit some tough shots. Maybe the Pistons would have lost anyway with better energy and focus. But we'll never know. They didn't have that. It's almost as if this team just can't allow itself to have nice things. No momentum really at any point throughout this season. Very sporadic that they've had even the opportunity to capture it. This was an opportunity. You're up to tied for 7th in the Eastern Conference. You're playing a team that is a little bit worse than you. Yeah, it was on a back-to-back, but you've got to come out with better energy than this. This was a real disappointment. Another potential disappointment looming, depending where your expectations are. Kevin Love is going to be out for a few weeks, which means there's going to be an all-star spot available in the Eastern Conference. As we talked about before, when the all-star teams were initially named, I think they got it exactly right in the East. You know, I might have changed a little bit who was starting, who was coming off the bench, but as far as the all-stars, I think they were exactly right, and that meant Andre Drummond didn't make it. He was on my short list for it. You know, he wasn't that far off, but I would have had him out. Now with an open spot, I think it's worth revisiting. Does Drummond deserve to go? So just quick review. Here are the all-stars already. Kyrie Irving, DeMar DeRozan, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jimmy Butler, Isaiah Thomas, Kyle Lowry, Paul Millsap, Paul George, John Wall, Kemba Walker, and Love. So who replaces Love? I've got a decent-sized list, and I'm struggling to come up with much separation between any of these players. Hassan Whiteside, Dwight Howard, Joel Embiid, Al Horford, Kristaps Porzingis, and Drummond. That was my list of near misses when the selections came out. Since then, a couple Wizards, I think, are also, they weren't far behind my honorable mention list. They were honorable mention. But now, since then, I think they belong on the list of consideration right there with everybody else, and that's Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. Porter's been quietly very good for the Wizards. I know Beal gets most of the attention, but Porter's been very efficient in his own way, and you know, maybe Drummond deserves it. The way I like to think about All-Stars, it's a little different than most, is not who's had the best half season to this point. That's how I evaluate all NBA teams, who's had the best season. It's judged firmly by what you've done in this season and what you've accomplished. This is a little different to me. I'm not trying to parse who's had the better 50 or so game sample now. What I'm trying to figure out is who's the best player. Now, obviously, playing better over these 50 games is a pretty good indicator of who's a better player. But it's not the only thing. Like somebody like Paul George, I'm pretty comfortable with him being an all-star. And he's picked it up lately. But he was slumping through a lot of this season. He hasn't been so exceptional for what he's accomplished this season. But we know he's really good because he's been really good at points this season. He's been really good for several seasons prior. He has a track record. We have a pretty good idea of who he is. So this is the thought experiment I like to use for All-Star. I'll keep it simple. Take a team of 12 average players and insert your potential All-Star onto that team. So you have an average starting point guard, an average starting shooting guard, all the way down the line, an average sixth man, average seventh man, all the way down. So if you had Drummond as a center with a bunch of average players for their role, how would that team do relative to a team with Dwight Howard at center or Hassan Whiteside at center? And I think you have to take the big picture look, because Drummond matches up very well with Whiteside. Like, Drummond's team would beat Whiteside's team. because they'd be identical in every way except for Drummond and Whiteside. And Drummond just matches up very well with Whiteside. But there are some other matchups where Whiteside is better. So you have to take a bigger picture look. You can't just go on a one-to-one comparison. Just sort of as the thought exercise is like, imagine there were 500 of these teams with, you know, everybody in the NBA and like the top D-League players and all that. Like, and they all played each other, you know, 100 times. Who would have the best record at the end of that? Might be Drummond's team of the guys left in the Eastern Conference. He has a case. He's right there to me. I would not find it wrong for him to be an all-star. And really, I just named eight players. Eight players. So you pick any one of them, I have a hard time disputing it. Andre Drummond, Hassan Whiteside, Dwight Howard, Joel Embiid, Al Horford, Kristaps Porzingis, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter. If it's one of those eight, I'm not going to complain. I guess if I really, really had to like make a call, it would be Joel Embiid, but he's not going to be picked. He's injured himself. I wouldn't hate like Adam Silver picking Embiid because he deserves the honor. And then moving on to a replacement for the replacement. And then it gets even harder. I sort of think I might lean Porzingis or Beal or Drummond. It's all very close. Like I don't have a strong feeling on it. I'm not going to come up with a take just to have a take. That's the way things are in a lot of places. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you these eight are very close. The next question is, who do you think it will be? And in the past, Adam Silver has said he's deferred to the coach's vote and at the position of the injured player, whoever ranks next highest in the coach's vote is who he's given it to. The coach has picked the reserves. Is he going to do that again? And we can maybe predict like who's going to be the next highest among the coaches, and it could be Drummond. If you look at the vote for the starters in the NBA scoring system, where it's partial media, partial fan, partial player vote, Kristaps Porzingis was the next highest. And that system didn't exist in years past. And so now that the NBA has introduced this more complex system for picking starters, maybe Silver will defer to that because he wants to endorse this new system that he set up. And if that's the case, then Porzingis is next in line. But Porzingis is a younger player. He doesn't strike me as somebody who's going to be super popular in the coaches' vote. I think Drummond might be. You know, no, he's not on a great team, but the Hawks already have their all-star in Paul Millsap. So that makes it tougher for Dwight Howard. I think a lot of coaches look at it that way as, you know, how many all-stars does this team deserve? Do the Hawks look like a two all-star team? Do the Celtics with Al Horford look like a two all-star team with Isaiah Thomas? And so I wouldn't be surprised if it's Drummond. I'll say this. If I'm ranking my confidence in who it should be versus who predicting who it will be, I have more faith that it will be Drummond than it should be Drummond. So you look at these guys and who coaches might appreciate and who coaches might go for. I don't think Drummond's far off. So maybe I'm just getting hopes up a little too much. Maybe there's going to be more disappointment for this Pistons team that has provided it over and over this year whenever you think they're on the verge of something. One more place where they might be disappointed, on the trade market. On the trade market, we've seen one trade today. Serge Ibaka going from the Magic to the Raptors. I think that's a bad deal for the Pistons in a very small sense, because I think it makes both the Raptors and Magic better right now. This is obviously more about the long term for Orlando, getting a first round pick, getting Terrence Ross, who is under contract for additional years. It's more about the long term for Orlando, but the Magic have such a bad logjam of big men. Pistons fans might be familiar with what that's like. Don't have to think too far back to the Josh Smith, Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe days. And it's kind of like that, except for like add a big man or two more. They really just clogged it all together. And just removing one of them, I think, could be addition by subtraction. Terrence Ross is going to be a nice addition on the wing. He'll help them this year. So no, I don't think this actually matters for the Pistons too much. The two ways it might for each team. One is if the Pistons play the Magic in the playoffs. Pistons got to get to the playoffs, but if they do, they could be matched up with Toronto. Toronto's kind of in that 2-4 range. Pistons, if they're scheduled the rest of the way, if they take advantage of it like they could, they probably won't. How many times do we need to be made aware that this team does not take advantage of its favorable schedule. But if they do like they could be anywhere in that 5-8 range. So that's a potential first-round matchup that just got a little tougher. And then there's always a chance that the Magic catch the Pistons from behind. I'm not counting on that. I think it's more likely that the Pistons fall down to the range where the Magic are. But I'm not counting on that either. I don't think either of those is anywhere near likely. I don't think the Pistons are close enough to the Magic for this to matter. So I don't think the trade matters in that sense, most likely. But if it does, it's probably negative. The way I do think it matters is it gave us some information about the trade market for centers. There was already a trade of two centers for each other. Yusuf Nurkic going from the Nuggets to the Trailblazers, and then Mason Plumlee going back from Portland to Denver. Doesn't really give us a great sense of the center market because it was one center traded for another. Ibaka's a big man, though. Traded for a wing for a first-round pick. It was a nice return. I like the trade for the Raptors. I like the trade for the Magic. But in the aftermath, Zach Lowe and some others really talked about how weak the offers were for Ibaka outside of this one. It seems like the market for centers is just not strong. It's very weak. And that does not bode well for trading Aaron Baines, who's probably the Pistons' most expendable player. They have the ready-made replacement on the roster in Boban. They could trade Baines for either help on the wing or a draft pick. The Pistons owe a couple draft picks, second-rounders in future years, maybe recoup one of those. Baines seems likely to leave in the offseason. But if this is an indicator of where the center market is, probably not going to make sense to deal Baines. But we'll see. It definitely could. This is just one trade. Maybe this talks more about how people view Ibaka individually. But I do think it says something about the center market. One last topic for today. Let's end on some bright news, a time where the Pistons got a break, where something went in their favor. One, they just beat the Raptors. They didn't have to play Toronto with Serge Ibaka. This trade could have happened a few days earlier, and that game could have been much tougher. Pistons won by only one. No margin for error. The Pistons won by one because Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hit a three-pointer with 13 seconds left, and the Pistons got a stop on the other end. They got a stop on the other end, though, because they got away with a shooting foul. Marcus Morris, according to the NBA's last two-minute report, should have been called for fouling DeMar DeRozan on Toronto's final shot. It would have been two free throws for DeRozan, who's a very good free throw shooter. That could have tied the game. It could have given the Raptors the lead. Pistons got a big break there. I don't know exactly how to feel about the two-minute reports. I won't tell you how to feel about them. I find them interesting. I'm curious to know how those calls went, how those game-defining calls down the stretch went. This one was a big break in the Pistons' favor. Maybe we'll look back at the end of the year and that win is the difference between making the playoffs or not. It was a big one. So you can feel good about that. I know most of everything else I talked about today was a little more pessimistic. Maybe we'll be more optimistic going ahead. Maybe not. We'll see what the circumstances dictate. But you can find out. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.
Napa Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.